You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. So, when you really think about it, in a way, for all the musicians, the songwriters, producers, concert promoters, all of the people involved in the music industry, the story of pop music has been largely propelled forward by one creature, the teenage girl. Each generation has sort of had their version of somebody who was propelled forward by the teenage girl. In the 30s, it was Bing Crosby. In the 40s, it was Frank Sinatra. There was Elvis and Ricky Nelson. Of course, the Beatles in the 1960s. The 70s had a whole bunch of them. But there was one group which is from right here in Boston. And if you were a teenage girl in the late 1980s or the early 1990s, you know what I'm talking about. The New Kids on the Block. Well, as hard as it may be to believe, I guess the youngest of the New Kids on the Block is now about to turn 40 at the end of this year. So it's about time for them to get a little bit of a retrospective, and they've gotten just that from Nikki Van Noy, who is the author of the now authorized biography of the New Kids on the Block. It's called The New Kids on the Block, Five Brothers and a Million Sisters. And with me in the studio right now is Nikki Van Noy. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in and talking with us here on Boston Public Radio about hometown superstar boy band, the New Kids on the Block. So, I'm curious how you got started on this project, sort of being the authorized biography of these guys in this band.
I wrote a book about Dave Matthews Band, previous to writing this book, and what drew me to the DMB book was the connection that that band has with their audience. And the New Kids have the same thing. Only I think it's actually a little more interesting because they're a pop band, and you tend to see that back and forth interaction more frequently in the jam band sphere.
Yeah.
So there's that. And I also just love the New Kids story. I think it's like a great sports story, and I love the Boston element living here too.
Okay, so I want to go through the story a little bit, the New Kids on the Block story, the one that you say is kind of like a sports story. And let's kind of start at the beginning for people who maybe don't know who this group is, or they have a vague sense of it. They remember maybe a couple of the songs in the late 80s. These are five guys, all relatively close in age, all from here, right? Four of them from Dorchester. Who are the New Kids on the Block? Like, who are they?
So they're Donnie Wahlberg, Danny Wood, Jordan and John Knight, and Joe McIntyre. And everyone except for Joe is from Dorchester. He's from Jamaica Plain. The other four guys were all in the same sort of sphere growing up. They're in the same age group. Some of them went to school together. They were from close-in neighborhoods. And they sort of knew each other from, you know, just being around, from school, from break dancing. They were in that sort of hip-hop scene together.
Mm-hmm.
Donnie and Danny were really close. I think that there were some pre-existing friendships. They weren't all necessarily best friends, but certainly knew each other and each other's families.
So how did the band get together? Was this something that happened organically? The guys started the band, or was this something, did they answer an audition? Did somebody pull them together? What were the beginnings? How did it get started?
So what happened was Maury Starr, who was the producer for New Edition, who had just broken with him, wanted to start a new band. So the idea was sort of a white New Edition, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it was, he had some feelers out there, but it wasn't like a big, you know, talent call or anything like that. He worked with Mary Alford, who was another local. She stumbled on Donnie Wahlberg, who was a little bit of a known commodity because him and Danny Wood, also in the band, were doing little rap and dance routines at, you know, Catholic high schools around Dorchester.
And how old are they at this point, like Danny and Donnie?
I think that they were around 14 or 15.
Okay.
They were young. So Donnie went in, Danny didn't. He went in with Mark Wahlberg.
This is Mark Wahlberg, who has gone on to become the Mark Wahlberg superstar, movie star, executive producer of every show on HBO, Mark Wahlberg.
That one. He is initially a flunked out new kid, actually.
Wow.
So it was Donnie and Mark to start off with.
Okay.
And Mark didn't last for very long. He had other interests.
He had to find the Funky Bunch.
Exactly.
And go make Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Exactly. So the end result is that Donnie was the only new kid for a long time.
So he was the new kid. So did he then gather these other guys around him?
Yeah. And that's, I think, where their story gets a little convoluted. They were really pegged during their heyday for being this manufactured group, but ultimately it was really Donnie collecting neighborhood kids.
So they put a record out in, I think it was 1986 was their first record. A lot of it, or all of it, written by Maurice Starr, producer. And it had a real bubblegum flavor. I've got a cut from one of the singles from that first album. The album eventually became called New Kids on the Block. Here is, let's listen to this. I want to hear a little bit of this. I want you to hear a little bit of this.
Very good.
This is a song called Stop It Girl from their very first release in 1986. Here's the New Kids on the Block at the beginning. All right, there you go. So,
great tune.
Yeah. You hear a little bit of some of the stuff you were saying, that idea of like putting a white New Edition together, and you can kind of get a sense of that there.
Yeah. Like if you think about Candy Girl, you can definitely hear it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So this came out, but this didn't really do anything, this record, right?
No, I think it got them a couple of local, I want to say R&B charts, but like 98, really high up the chart.
Yeah, so and it would be their next album, which comes out maybe 2 years later after they'd kind of cut their teeth. They toured around Boston and, you know, Maurice Starr, as I understand, would book them anywhere. Schools, gymnasiums, like you name it, they were playing. And he convinces the record company to give him another shot to do a second record, even though the first one didn't do well.
Yeah, which was a hard sell. I mean, their history almost ended right there.
How did he do? Was Maurice Starr just being tenacious? Did he see something in these guys? Why did he continue to push the idea forward when the first record was kind of really not doing anything?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have to say I didn't talk to Maurice, but my impression is I think he just really believed in them, and the New Kids by that time were bonded together and having fun. So they didn't want to stop. And I think that together they just all kind of pushed and it worked.
Okay. And so on the second record, that's the one where they're going to blow up. They're going to become international superstars. That's Hanging Tough. Now, this did not become an immediate success either. They put the first single was Please Don't Go Girl, I believe.
Yes.
And initially that comes out. Let's hear Please Don't Go Girl. Let's get a sense of how they've maybe matured, maybe not into the second record. Let's hear some of Please Don't Go Girl. This is Girl Mux. Let's hear it. So a little bit more of a ballad here.
Yes.
Which is kind of one of the things that they would do well through their career. And this is Joey McIntyre singing on this one, right?
Yes.
Now, he's the one who's kind of an outlier. Like you said, he wasn't one of these original sort of four. He was a little bit younger than the rest of them. What was his role in, you know, the success? Was it by adding him? Was he sort of different than the rest of them?
Yeah, he was definitely very different. He explains himself at that age as not only being younger, but being 12 going on 8. He was like a really small kid from a different neighborhood. And the other guys had already bonded to an extent, too. So he had to kind of fight his way in on a lot of levels. And things also changed when he came in because it had been Donnie and Jordan primarily taking the leads. And then it switched over more to Joe and Jordan.
Okay. So that song kind of catches fire. What happens then? How do they go from kind of having one single to becoming basically international superstars, which happens over the course of like what, a year?
Right.
Right on this. What happened?
Well, that song, first of all, almost flopped too, because it was marketed to art. They were marketed as an R&B group to BET was where everything was being released. So what happened was a pop radio station in Tampa, Florida picked it up. It went to number one and then they started to go. The next big thing that happened was they began opening for Tiffany on tour.
Okay.
She was huge at that time and
That's
had
right.
a lot of 12 and 13-year-old girls.
Now.
Yes, exactly.
Cover of the Tommy James song.
Yeah.
Of course.
So it got them in front of the right audience, basically. Yeah. And you've got these five energetic kids on stage. They were going for it. And they just, I mean, it was actually sort of more grassrootsy than you would think. They were just winning over these audiences at fairs and stuff like that.
And they were, you know, they have these things in addition to music, right? They're all pretty good-looking guys, dancers, fashion, the whole ball of wax, right? So, so they start to blow up. They start to become a huge success, and this whole kind of Beatlemania stuff begins to happen. So, what happens to them at this point? I mean, are they going through this strong together? Does infighting start to happen? Like, what's happening inside of that circle as this fame is exploding around them, which oftentimes tears people apart in groups?
Right. Well, I think that they really are like brothers. So all along there was it was like brothers. You know, you fight sometimes, you get along sometimes, you've got each other's back. They were in it together. And I think that initially from 88 to 89, as they were rising, everything was great. It was exciting. They were, you know, getting everything that they had worked really hard for a long time at this point. Where it seems like it started to turn was during the Magic Summer Tour in 1990.
Okay. So this is after Hangin' Tough's success. Is this a tour that happened with Hangin' Tough's success, or is it after that?
It's after. So okay. Step by Step was released in summer of 1990, and this tour went along with it.
Okay.
And I think that then they were playing stadiums. It was just a whirlwind of one tour after another, no breaks in between. I think that then there began to be some splits in the group, and the pressure just closed in.
I'm talking with Nikki Van Noy, who's the author of New Kids on the Block, Five Brothers and a Million Sisters, which is the authorized biography of hometown superstars New Kids on the Block. And she mentioned earlier, and it's here in the title, the Million Sisters part, this idea of a connection with the fans. And I want to talk about that with her right now. But I actually also want to throw open our phone lines. If you are a New Kids on the Block fan, I'd love to hear your story about either back in the day when you were a fan, or if you've come to them after the fact. If you are one of the New Kids on the Block and you're listening, you can call us as well. Here's the number, 877-301-8970. That's 877-301-8970. Memory stories. What do you got about the New Kids on the Block? We want to hear about it right now. We are with the authorized biographer, Nikki Van Noy. Okay, so the connection with the fans. And the fans are largely, what, teenage girls?
Yeah.
Why this group? I can't get my head around it. And I am of the age, my sister was nuts about these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, her bedroom there was no walls in her bedroom. There were just pictures of Joey McIntyre and pictures of Jordan Knight. Why do you think, after talking to them, after studying this, why do you think they exploded the way they did with teenage girls?
I do think you have to be a teenage girl to understand it completely. But the thing about them is they were polished in some ways. They were very hard workers. They were into it, but they were unpolished in other ways.
Yeah.
Their personalities were out there. They were kind of goofy. They weren't trying to be perfect. And there was the combination of that and that they just exploded on stage. There was so much energy. I think that was a large part of it. There was just this excitement surrounding them. And they seemed relatable to an extent, too. Also, you have five very different guys. So, you know, there's sort of a guy for every girl when you're that age.
And yeah.
Having your first, you know, imaginary boyfriend or whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Beatles model, right? I mean, you can draw a lot of comparisons. But one of the things I find interesting is that, you know, you look at the Beatles in the 60s, and it was sort of the same thing. You had the quiet one and the cute one. And they had massive success with teenage girls. But they were able to somehow cross over, have success with boys as well.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually mature as musicians and have success. And on some level, the New Kids on the Block have done that as well. But there was a big gap in between. And I think they always struggled with boys. Was that something that management was doing? Is that something that Maurice Starr and record companies were doing? Or was that something the New Kids were doing? Were they trying to just appeal to girls, or did they want to be like musicians appealing to everybody?
Yeah. Well, first of all, remember that they found the teenage girl market accidentally. That's one. Number two, one of the big problems with Step by Step in that era was they wanted to be doing different music. Donnie talks about wanting to do crossover music at that point, and they just couldn't wrangle it. There was no time to. So I don't think that that was necessarily their intention. I think that that's where they landed, and there is no pulling back after a certain point.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're going to go to the phone lines here. We've got an eager Debbie from Boston who is a self-described super fan here. So let's bring Debbie up on the line. Debbie, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. You got you've got a New Kids on the Block story to share with us?
I was just saying that I can't even begin to talk about my memories of New Kids on the Block. I graduated high school in 1993 and grew up in Beverly, Massachusetts. Every weekend, my dad used to drive myself and my two sisters to Dorchester. We'd hang out in front of Danny Wood's house and Jordan, the Knight family's house, We wave at his parents and see the dog. We went to Worcester Centrum once where I had seventh row seats, and halfway there, the car broke down, and we literally flagged someone on the side of the road and went to the Centrum where I had the seventh row seats next to Donnie Wahlberg's mother. I saw people fainting. I saw them about 14 times. It's so funny to think of this memory. I see notebooks and posters. And then as an adult, not that long ago, I happened to see John Knight in a restaurant in Essex, Massachusetts, and I thought I was going to faint, and I was 30-something years old.
Unbelievable. Debbie, can you put your finger on what it was about that time? Was it you or was it them, do you think?
I mean, it definitely helped being a little teeny bopper teenager, 14 years old. But I just fell in love with them. Jordan Knight was my teenage crush. And my sister liked Joey, and my other friend liked Donnie. So it was, each of them had something special, I think, that reached out to a lot of different teenage girls.
Well, there you go. Thank you. Thanks for calling and sharing your New Kids on the Block memory. Glad you got to share it with us here on Boston Public Radio today. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you.
So, Nikki, she sort of gets at what you were getting at. There's sort of someone for everybody there.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a, you know, there's that appeal. One of the things I like about the book is that you talk with a ton of fans in the book, because that is the story for you here. And you hear, you know, what Debbie was just saying over and over and over again. This happened all over the country. Did this surprise you?
No, not well. I think that I was drawn to this project because of that, but it's one thing to sort of know that academically and then another thing to experience it. Like, Debbie's a great example, and I think this is amazing and really fascinating, is you can still hear the excitement over something that happened so long ago, and it's such a vibrant memory. It really has stuck with people, and I think that that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think you nailed that idea. It's sort of particular to a time in your life, like, to be. I mean, I was never a teenage girl, but as a teenager, you kind of, you know, there's something special about that time too. You know.
Yeah.
Inevitably, like you said, there was sort of this decline. I think with what they had built, it seems to me that it was kind of inevitable because of their fan base. The fan base is going to grow older, and I think that sort of coincided with a difficult time in music. And by 94, like you said, with Step by Step, they're on tour. I mean, if you look at the music landscape at that time, to really look back at 94, grunge had been rising and stuff like that, and they're sort of trying to do something different, really work. But they didn't go away completely, and this is interesting to me. Why do you think they reunite years and years later in 2008 and end up kind of going strong now for the next few years? They do the whole thing with the Backstreet Boys recently. How did that come? How did they come back together?
So they came back together in large part because the five of them were ready. And I think that when you think about it, to get five people living their own lives ready to come together at the same time is sort of a miracle in and of itself. They were all ready for various reasons. Some had things going on in their personal life that this was a good sort of outlet for. And I think others were just ready to go back and revisit that time. There was a huge backlash against the New Kids. So I think all that time had to pass for this to be a good idea again. You know, it wouldn't have worked a few years before, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm talking with Nikki Van Noy. She is the author of New Kids on the Block, Five Brothers and a Million Sisters. So they've done a couple of successful tours in the last few years. They put a new record out.
Yeah.
They do this other thing, which I find fascinating. I want you to tell us about this. They do a cruise.
Mm-hmm. They're going on their fifth year. This one coming up is going to be their fifth year. It is crazy. So this was my entree into the modern NKOTB world. The first thing I did for this book was went on a cruise. And I spent the first 3 days, I think, with my jaw dropped. Because you're on a very full boat. It's the fastest selling cruise in the cruising industry. I mean, these people, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
But it's not only the fans that are obviously excited, but the New Kids are right out there in the middle of the fray, eating it all up. And it's pretty amazing to watch, actually.
who goes on the cruise? Is it like fans from that time, or like who's there?
Well, I mean, they've got a strong fan base at this point. The Blockhead community is alive and well.
The Blockhead community, there you go.
And you know, I heard this from a lot of people. Like, the first time around, they were 12, 13, 14, whatever. They had no control over what they could do. Their parents were calling the shots. Now there's this feeling of, you know, I'm grown up, I have my own money, this is an escape from real life, I can do it, so.
All right, real quick, because we got to go, I got to ask you, I know you were a fan when you were younger, when you started doing this book and started, like, interviewing them and stuff, were you freaking out a little bit inside?
I thought that I would be, but they're so normal, 30 seconds into it, you just forget.
That's awesome. Yeah. Really cool. All right, well, thank you for spending time hanging tough with us today
thank
here.
You.
Nikki Van Noy, author of New Kids on the Block, Five Brothers and a Million Sisters, the authorized biography of, you got it, The New Kids on the Block. And that is going to do it for us this afternoon on Boston Public Radio. We will, of course, be back tomorrow. We've got our 30 issues in 30 days coverage. We're going to be talking about housing for the elderly. We've got a whole bunch of other stuff on the docket as well. For Kara Miller and for Emily Rooney, I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. Boston Public Radio is a production of WGBH. Have a great afternoon.